This is an interview with Victor Vlad for the Youngstown State University Oral History Program regarding Romanian culture in Mahoney County by John Mancini. At the request of Mr. Vlad, this taping session is taking place at his place of work, which is Livingston's at 225 Federal Street, Youngstown, Ohio, on March the 8th, 1976 at 3:30 p.m. Mr. Vlad's place of residence is at 159 Green Bay Drive, Boardman, Ohio. Victor, what part of Romania did your parents or grandparents come from?
My father came from Tisa in Județul Hunedoara. My mother came from Oradea Mare, lived there her girlhood life. She was born originally in Cluj, but at the early age she went to live with an uncle in Oradea.
What part of Romania is that?
That's in the northern part of the of Romania.
I see. When you were born, were you born in Romania or in the United States, sir?
I was born on East Side, New York, on 77th Street and 1st Avenue. And at the early age of 10 months, Dad, Mom, and I were returned to Romania. Mom and I remained there. My father returned to New York and continued his job that he had in the fur industry. I remained there for 14 years. I went to primary schools. I went to the first, second, and third year of the Lyceum, Liceu Aurel Laicu din Oreștie, from Oreștie, which is in Județul Hunedoara.
I see. What motivated them to originally come to the United States? Because you mentioned you were born in the United States. What motivated them to originally come to the United States?
Mother had no choice. She was married to a young man who wanted to come to New York, and she came with him as a bride.
Was it more or less due to economical conditions?
Most likely it was an individual that we didn't know. That was her first marriage.
Oh, I see.
And then as soon as they got to New York, he abandoned my mother.
I see.
And my mother had to live with the sisters on 1st Avenue in New York City at the convent. My father, on the other hand, had a definite economic reason for leaving Romania, coming to the United States, and it took him 18 years to get from Romania to the United States.
Oh, really?
And a gentleman that still lives today were given as Inash to learn how to work the cojoc, which is the traditional Romanian hair, side inside, first side inside, leather side outside, leather coats, and at the age of 7, they were supposed to remain there till 14 before they got the papers to go into the trade for themselves.
Yeah, see.
But he ran away with this gentleman, Mr. John Bombish. They went to Paris. They befriended some Romanian Jewish people in Paris that trained them, both of them, into the fur business as it is known today.
Mm-hmm.
Not cojocaria, but into the regular pelts of finer furs, which are in the typed everywhere today. Dad became, for a short time, a citizen of France.
Oh.
And after the beginning of the Second World War, he founded that he still was considered as an alien in France, even though a citizen.
I see.
So he migrated to England. From England, he was sent by a company to Argentina. He lived in Argentina, Brazil, Ecuador for 2 years.
Oh, my.
Then he came to the United States.
I see.
In this period, my father's education consisted of probably 2 or 3 years of elementary school, but in the process, he learned to read, write fluently 7 languages.
Oh, he was really
so. Dad was a rather well-rounded person in languages. He was extremely interested in politics and a very devoted church member.
I see.
As such, in New York, he sought Orthodoxy, which we belonged to and I was Christian into.
I see.
And at the beginning, we did not find a Romanian Orthodox Church. As a mm-hmm. consequence, we went first to the Greek and then with the Russian Orthodox on East Side and 105th Street. And then Father Nader, which was originally a gentleman that waited on tables,
mm-hmm.
became interested in pulling the Romanian people together.
Mm-hmm.
And by virtue of his intelligence or whatever,
mm-hmm.
became a priest.
I see.
And he was the first priest that we remember in New York City.
This is before you went back to Romania?
No, this is since.
So
this was in the very late 30s and early 40s.
I see, sir. When did you return back to Romania? You mentioned that your parents got
married. 1926, we went back to Romania.
Was this his business that brought him back to Romania then?
Father took me back there because he thought that I was too ill to survive in the New York
climate. Oh, I see.
And he presumed that living in the European or his own country would be more beneficial to his son.
I see.
And that was a...
Could you tell us a little bit about the cultural life that you remember in Romania in your stay over there as a little youngster?
In cultural life, I suppose, would be also the personal life that people lead.
Well,
Dad was a peasant. They lived in one-room house.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a closeness of family that I don't find very often today in our New York or modern living of the
mm-hmm.
United States. The richness of song, I remember the most. There was never an occasion that they didn't get together, that people didn't sing.
You mean the neighbors would get together?
Neighbors, family, whatever. There was always some excuse for singing.
Mm-hmm.
Winter time was the most pleasant time.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had, I don't know if you were ever told about Klokot.
No.
Where the ladies gathered together and plucked feathers to make pillows and things. And the gentlemen gathered together to make ornaments out of harnesses and leather, cutting things out of wood for the razboi, which is the weavers, hand weavers, that were in the homes.
Mm-hmm.
And all those implements like the fus and the socala were all hand cut. And this is what the young
What's
man...
What's the socala, sir?
The shuttle that takes the thread from one left side to right side to left side in the weaver's
Oh,
bed.
I see.
And this is a thing that the men and women did in the evening time, and there were always stories. Even most of them did not at that time, as far as I recall, knew how to read and write.
Were they folklore stories, or
folklore,
was they made up
basically,
themselves?
Basically, there was handed down from father to son, mother to daughter.
I see.
And, of course, our Transylvanian area of Romania is very rich in folklore, of both werewolves and other.
Is that the kind that they usually told then?
Yes,
and
yes.
Like
yes.
Dracula type of stories then?
Right.
Oh, I see.
Right.
I see. Also, in that area, was there any Orthodox type of church or Catholic type of church?
In the town that I lived in and I grew up was called Orăștia.
Yes, sir.
Orăștia was originally Romanian, which was taken over by the Austro-Hungary Empire, and it had two other names. It had the name of Hungarian called Szászváros, and it had the German name of Siebenbergen.
Oh.
And then when the Romanian Transylvania was returned to the Greater Romania after
mm-hmm.
the war, then it became again Orăștia. As a consequence, my town was divided into three segments, Saxon, Hungarian, and Romanian.
I see.
We grew side by side with Roman Catholic and with the Protestant, as well as with the Orthodoxy. We had a tremendous gathering around our church.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that in our life revolved was around the church.
In other words, even a culture was dependent upon a church.
Dependent upon a church.
I see.
Holidays were absolute must attend churches.
I see.
Everybody looked forward to the Christmas, New Year period. Some still celebrated the old Christmas.
Mm.
As a consequence, our holidays were very long at Christmas time.
I guess so. Mm-hmm.
And there were traditions of dances and colinda, which are the holiday singing of songs,
yes,
caroling. We had Kalusher, which traveled from town to town.
Was that a dance
group? Professional group of dancers,
I see,
which performed Romanian dances, which I basically have never seen in any other country or any other nationality perform.
Did they perform for money or just
yes,
for the fun?
Yes, strictly for money.
I see. Well, yes. Did that money go through the church or?
No, this went to the individual groups that played. And whether they turned that into a fund of some kind, I don't know. I don't recall that. But some of the young men that migrated in this valley, like my father-in-law, John mm-hmm. Pritzer, his brother, Daniel Pritzer, Mr. Tickell, mm-hmm. and the rest of them, used to do these dances when they were young in the old country. And they tried to do the same thing when they were young over here and teach us, the children, in here, but it didn't.
When they would have these dances, Mr. Vlad, did they have food and more like a festival type of atmosphere?
Yeah, the entire 2-3 weeks was like a Mardi Gras, involving foods, drink, song.
Was it basically Romanian type of food?
All Romanian. All Romanian. Shonk, carnats, stuffed cabbage, mamaliga cu brânză, which is cornmeal mush with cheese.
Right. You mentioned about your schooling over there. Could you tell us basically what you were taught in school? Because this is unique since the people that I have interviewed, most of them, did not attend school over there to
mm-hmm.
speak of. Could you tell us a little bit about what was taught in regards to Romanian culture and so forth?
The children in the 1930 period attended kindergarten as they would in the United States.
I see.
Stress was put on social graces, as a young lady and a young gentleman dancing and doing ballet and the living together type of social behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went into our primary schools, which were the first, second, third, fourth grade.
I see.
Fifth, sixth, and seventh were for children that did not intend to go to lyceum. And in those 3 last years, they were taught trades, such as woodworking, smithy, and being agricultural-minded because of our agricultural background in Romania. Those that intended to go to higher learning from their fourth year went directly into the first year of Lyceum, which in Orăștia was Liceu Aurel Vlaicu. Incidentally, the name of Aurel Vlaicu in Romanian is synonymous to Orwell and his brother Wright in the United States. He was the first Romanian flyer to put and successfully fly a plane from Transylvania to Regati himself. He attended Liceu in Orăștia and returned, and on one of his trips he did crash into the Carpathian Mountains and die. But as an honor, our Lyceum was named after him, Aurel Vlaicu.
When did you return to the United States, sir?
In May of 1937.
Now, in regards to when your father came back to the United States, did he resume his fur trading?
Dad had been employed all his life in fur industry, always in the fur industry of New York City in the United States.
Did you return back to the New York City area?
Yes, I did, 1937. Mother and I, because of the impending war,
mm-hmm.
and gathering clouds of unrest in the Balkan area, Dad thought or seemed wise for us to return.
I did. Did you have a difficult time adjusting to the American way of life, the language, and etc. when you came back to the United States?
Yes, yes.
Could you tell us a little bit about how you went about adjusting?
In order to say that, I must preface it by telling you what happened to our life first in Romania.
Okay.
Because of the money's exchange between the American dollar and the Romanian lei, my father's earning in this country was enormous in Romania.
I see.
As a consequence, there were periods that we were considered very wealthy. And we did have a lot of people that worked for us. And we led, both mother and I and my sister, who died in Romania, had a very fine and very comfortable life. And in returning to the United States, and from a large country home, living high in the mountains with pine trees and all the open space in the world, to be confined in a three-room apartment was a hard thing to accept, even for a young person.
Yes, I guess so.
But it was novel and it was new, and the first fascinating thing that I discovered was canned food. We never had anything canned food in Romania. Everything was fresh.
Well, did you have refrigeration at all?
None. No electricity, none at all.
So you would have to consume over there, which you could, or right. You would have to salt and put it away then?
Everything was preserved in the method of the old ones, which was salt brine and hanging the meat to dry. And if summertime came and it wasn't consumed, it would be spoiled.
I see.
And there were other methods of canning that the women perfected through the years, and we maintained that as our source of food. But basically it was going into the yard, catch a chicken, and have it for supper.
I see.
Whereas in New York it was an entirely different world. You're stepping from one century into the other. Very fascinating. Very fascinating.
Getting back to the question again that I had asked, did you have difficulty in learning the American language, because I presume in Romania you spoke exclusively Romanian.
Right. Well, in Romania I learned Hungarian because of necessity. The town was partially Hungarian and my neighbors were Hungarian. And for children to live together, they would learn one language and another.
Right.
I also learned part German.
I see.
So I came to the United States with Romanian, Hungarian, and a little German. English was very difficult for me. I think it took the better part of 2 years to get pretty well.
Did your parents your parents must have had some knowledge
of it. Mother and Dad spoke English, of course.
And did they try to teach you some of that when
they
you were
did,
ready to come?
They did, but they found it better to find a tutor.
Oh, I see.
And we had a lady that was teaching in a primary school in New York that was of Romanian background.
I see.
And the name escapes me for a moment. She was the one that came and tried to help out with the rough spots in the language.
Was there a Romanian community in the New York area in which you live, sir?
No, not as we know it in New York, in Youngstown. New York was very loose. If one Romanian knew of another Romanian, he contacted him. But there was no central place to go to meet or to find an individual of Romanian heritage and background until the Saint Dumitru Church was organized by Father Hadigan from Cleveland. Father Hadigan had his first parish in New York.
I see.
And he and Cornelia, his wife, started first with the choir, then made great efforts and with great success rounded the Romanians together.
So they influenced the Romanian culture greatly
they
then?
They did. They
in
did,
New York.
Did a tremendous amount of keeping. Actually, it was with the two of them that had gathered the Romanian background to the extent that immigrants that came from Romania knew to contact the church directly.
Oh, New York.
New York, and the father would place them first in rented rooms if that's what they wanted, empty apartments, find them jobs, all through Romanian contacts and Romanian people. So he set up a network, and he was the one that really made it easier for an immigrant to come to New York.
I see. When did you come into the Youngstown area, sir?
In 1958, I came to Youngstown to live permanently.
I see.
Up to that time, I only visited here. I met a Youngstown girl. I married her, took her to New York, and she loved it. She didn't want to return to Youngstown. But I did. I loved this community. I found it to be friendly. I found a lot of Romanian background and heritage that I dearly loved. I would like to continue the language into my son and his son and so on. I would like to continue the traditions of foods and customs and songs and history that we brought with us from the old country.
Excuse me, you mentioned about a folklore type of stories, and that it was more or less like a Dracula type of stories. Do they have any kind of stories in which told of national heroes? Or
yes, of
like
course.
That?
One of the greatest that was told is Gruia lui Novac.
Could you tell briefly what that is?
Gruia lui Novac is a song or is a poem which pertains to an enormously strong and brave man that had two sons that were extremely lucky at harvesting grain and at the same time fighting the Ottoman Empire, which went back and forth over the Romanian territory. In the very same way that you have the Paul Bunyan of the Nordwoods of the United States.
Did he actually exist?
No.
No.
No. This was his folk. This somebody made up. Of course, the name of Vlad Tepes was loved very much, probably because the name was similar in our town. The people in my father's town had lived there so long that it was a great amount of intermarriage. Everybody was cousin and third cousin to everybody in the town.
Were any of these stories retold at all in your knowledge in the remaining communities in the United States?
No, I don't think so. I have not heard any, and was never in a situation where we would hear about it.
So then, in other words, that kind of culture has died down.
It probably stopped right there. It was lost.
I see. When you came into this area, sir, what did you notice about the remaining community itself? Did you notice that it had become Americanized, or that it was still clinging to its Romanian background?
Well, one of the greatest jokes that I found about that was that if a Romanian moved into a strange neighborhood, 2 years later everybody knew Romanian. And we found that our people cling to the Romanian language to the extent that they would take a foreign word and make it into a Romanian verb or noun or whatever.
You take an English word like bucket and add an A at the end, bucket.
Trenu or caru.
Oh, I see.
So on. And these were, they're in the early 40s. There was a man in Cleveland or Detroit that used to write in one of the Romanian periodicals, the Românul American, in which he would put words like spectacle, glasses, and bucatul, like you mentioned before, of the Romanian working in a factory and his life, which I meant to look up and try to find, and I haven't been able to in the last 20-some, 30 years, but it's extremely funny and very interesting.
I guess it would be. It would be almost like reading a satire.
It would be.
Victor, could you tell me basically regarding the church on Wick Avenue, Who was the minister at the time that you started to attend in the 50s?
When I first came to Youngstown, Father Stanila was there, and Father Stanila came from the Wilson Avenue Church.
Right.
My father-in-law, John of Pritza, was one of the members that was instrumental, I suppose, in bringing the church to Wick Avenue.
I see.
I remember his telling us about the hardships they had in putting the church together on Wilson Avenue in the long, long ago, how many of them had to work sometimes, pass the head around to have Father Stanila get some monies to eat. And
so in other words, it was really economic hardships that
it was very difficult for them to put a church together. But after, when I came to Youngstown, the church was already bought, and I was there for the christening of Cornerstone Lane.
Mm-hmm.
The work was almost finished on the inside, and I find it to be a very rich church in its icons. I find it to be rich in the handwork. I would protest bitterly if any of them were to be removed in exchange for something in a modern vein.
Mm-hmm.
If any new church were to be built, I, if I'm alive and able, will definitely insist that those remain in whatever new church they will be put into, because it is of such great heritage and handcraft that I think is lost today.
It needs to be preserved.
Absolutely needs to be preserved, and our children must absolutely know where we came from.
I see.
And must not be a nebulous thing, and don't ask.
What is the chief method in which the church raises money for its functions and so forth to carry on its expenses? You mentioned that they did have difficulty before. What are some of the chief methods that they do employ?
Usually in the banquets, usually in giving up affairs for St. John's, for dinners, for the banquets, for fathers, for mothers.
You have served, I know, on Mother's Day banquet, I think. Do you usually make American food, or do you still try to serve some remaining type of dishes too?
I personally tried to incorporate both.
Mm-hmm.
There were times that for economic reasons and dollars and cents, I had to resort to serving the American type of food, such as hamburger. And
do you prepare these foods yourself?
Generally, my gang and I did. Yes.
Do you follow a cookbook or?
No, a pinch of this and a handful of that.
So that's the old Romanian style?
Right, if it tastes good, do it. And if it doesn't, add something else.
Oh, I see. And I bet you fellas have an enjoyable time putting it together.
This was probably something that we look forward to every year.
I see.
As a matter of fact, so much so that our children tried to get into the kitchen with us. Now, if you noticed, Johnny Correa, my boy John, Victor John, Limbian son Jeff, and if I omit anybody else, I'm sorry, but the children do love to come and help in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that too. In the culture itself, in the language and dances and so forth, have you noticed any attempt in recent years to try to preserve it, either by the church or society?
I noticed that our church right now is trying to do something in promoting and continuing our Romanian language by teaching it and by bringing books and textbooks and trying to have some of the people in the non-Romanian language group learn it, which I think is an enormously beneficial thing. I find it to be probably the best language to learn, and it's probably the most melodious language that I have heard, even more so than Italian, and due to the fact that we are basically of Latin background, our language is purer today than even Italian is towards the original Latin that was spoken 2,000 years ago.
Oh, one question about language. When you came here after spending so many years of your youth in Romania, Did you find that the Romanian spoken in America was similar to the Romanian spoken in Romania, or was there somewhat of a difference over the years because as
no,
language goes, it changes?
It changed because, you see, I found many diverse peoples from many areas of Romania which had different dialects.
Oh, I see.
In Romania, as I remember it as a young man, there were 7 distinct dialects. We in Transylvania, or my father's family, spoke a dialect that could not be understood in Logoj.
You mean if you would go from one area
from
to another,
area
sometimes
to
you can understand?
Right. Yes.
Oh,
now, Bunătsani had one language that was very difficult to understand by the Romanian of
But what about it written down? Was it basically the same?
The basic written down, which was the book language, mm-hmm. was observed too by the young people that learned and the people that did business. The people that lived day by day
mm-hmm.
lived by their own language.
Oh, and they changed their words to suit them.
The Moldovani, the definite language characteristic. The Regatsan had another definite language characteristic, which one had a difficulty correlating or trying to
mm-hmm.
understand, because the Vecchio Regat
mm-hmm.
had more of a Tatar Ottoman background into it, whereas the Transylvanians had more of the Latin, whereas the Logoshen or the people from that area had the Saxon, Hungarian, Polish influence, and so on.
So when you came to the Youngstown area, you probably still even noticed some of that too among the
real
old people.
Yes, of course, right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But during the years as the second generation has come over here, have you noticed that some of their Romanian has been the same as their parents, or has it itself changed a little bit?
Some of our second generation Romanians born in here,
yes,
in this country, have learned the language from their parents,
mm-hmm.
plus adding on to that language the accent of the of the English.
I see.
As a consequence, a Sebeșan has a different way of speaking
mm-hmm.
the language than from Sebeș.
I see.
And an Apozan has a different way of talking Romanian than if you were in Apold. The same way I suppose that my son will say it differently
mm-hmm.
than I from Orăștia. As a consequence, you will find at our banquets or our gatherings
mm-hmm.
a very difficult Romanian spoken.
So it's just really it's not the pure Romanian
no,
anymore as it was.
No, it is not. And the young people that come from Romania now, our newly arrived people,
mm-hmm.
will bring with them the higher caliber or Romanian language, which the people of this country born here
mm-hmm.
have a terrible time understanding, because the language
has
changed and incorporated a lot of the foreign words to make it more civilized because
mm-hmm.
of the industrialization coming to Romania. For example,
yeah.
in the early part, the culture of language was French,
mm-hmm.
which all of us had to learn in Romanian schools.
I see.
So French words were incorporated into Romanian language, but being a Romance language,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't a very hard thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then the German crept in, and now, of course, American language, which is English, is a great dominance into the Romanian language.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask one thing about your stories, because this is something unique. In the stories that were told, were they stories that were made up more or less by the people living in the mountains, or were they stories that, like you mentioned about Dracula like that, or were they stories that were passed down from generation to generation, more or less?
I would say it's passed down from generation to generation. Behind the whole thing is generally great love for its people,
mm-hmm.
from people where the story came from, its sat, or its town.
Mm-hmm.
It had to do with being proud. It had to do with being very friendly and in love with one another. Very seldom do I remember a bloodthirsty battle between one town and the other.
So
stories.
Most
there
of that was
of that.
Fictitious now that they make up that maybe Europeans have added to it, not
well,
so much
they have. They have added to it things that were completely foreign. Now, if you were to take some of the stories that you hear in America and go back to Romania or Transylvania, where I came from, those people would shake their heads and say, I never heard of anything like that.
Oh, I see.
Because it became so distorted.
Right.
As the centuries have gone, the time has gone by.
That's what I want to clarify then, because some of those stories of Dracula are so bloodthirsty.
No,
I didn't think that it actually was made by the
actually
peasantry.
That particular incident of the Dracula is true to this extent. There was Principality of Romania in the Transylvania area, which was ruled by a gang of people called princes. At that time, the Vlad, V-L-A-D, were the dominant one in the period of 1400 till the 1500 year. These men have a fierce love for their country and always tried to fight the invaders, which were at that time the Ottoman Empire. And the brutality that they extended to the invader created the stories which were distorted today by saying that Vlad Tepes, which is Vlad the Impaler, was Dracula, which is far from it. He was called Al Dracului, which means that the devil's implement or the devil's man, he was so fierce. But his was done only for the love of the country. It was not done, as people say, because of his
bloodthirstiness.
That was ridiculous.
Okay. Is there anything else that you would like to add, Mr. Blatt, in regards to this tape session that maybe you think might be important to bring up?
Yes, I'd like to continue our, first of all, the church that we have. We would like to continue our orthodoxy. We would like to continue our heritage of hymns, chants, and readings on Romanian in our churches, not to dissipate them. I would also like to have it known that we are somebody to be reckoned with in this country. We are not an unknown quantity. Our people are masters in degrees and doctors of degrees. And some of our people are renowned architects and lawyers, and some of us are in the better income groups, and that we have, without aid and help from any other peoples and for any other government section, done the things that we have done to our families by ourselves, because we like to progress and we like to do so. And I would hate to see them malign, and I would hate to see our Romanian heritage disappear.
Well, thank you for this tape session. And when Professor Nerdhart listens to it, if he comes across a few things that I omitted to ask, I hope you don't mind if I come and ask you a few more questions.
As a matter of fact, Professor Erhard was my wife's professor at Youngstown State, and my wife has never completed her university and degree. And when we returned to Youngstown, even though she has completed a business course, she wanted to continue to get her degree. And Dr. Erhard was one of the professors that was a teacher.
Well, I hope you don't mind, and if he asks me to ask a few questions, that...
Not at all. My pleasure.
Well, thank you very much for
thank
this educational taping. It really was. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.